It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said the patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Hope you had a very blessed Christmas. It is December 26th, which is Boxing Day. Did you know what Boxing Day is, Steve, by any chance?
Well, we've been kicking it around here in the last couple of days, and all I can tell you is that it originated in the United Kingdom and then propagated to any place that the United Kingdom had, you know, jurisdiction or rule over.
Okay, well, you got it. I'm looking at the history.com website, and it says December 26th is not only a day for Santa Claus to catch his breath, but a public holiday known as Boxing Day in the United Kingdom and other British Commonwealth countries such as Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. In spite of its peculiar name, Boxing Day has nothing to do with fisticuffs, the trashing of empty boxes left over from Christmas, or the return of unwanted presents to department stores. The term is of British origin, and the Oxford English Dictionary traces its earliest print to 1833, 4 years before Charles Dickens referred to it in the Pickwick Papers. The exact roots of the holiday name are unknown, but there are two leading theories, both of which are connected to charity, traditionally distributed to lower classes on the day after Christmas. So one idea is that December 26th was the day centuries ago when lords of the manor and aristocrats typically distributed Christmas boxes, often filled with small gifts, money, and leftovers from Christmas dinner to their household servants and employees who were required to work on December 25th, and this was in recognition of good service throughout the year. These boxes were, in essence, holiday bonuses. Another popular theory is that the Boxing Day moniker arose from the alms boxes that were placed in churches during the Advent season for the collection of monetary donations from parishioners. Clergy members distributed the contents of the boxes to the poor on December 26, which is also known as the Feast of Stephen, the first Christian martyr and a figure known for acts of charity. Ireland celebrates December 26 as St. Stephen's Day. Pretty interesting, Steve. What do you think?
Well, we heard the other day from Bill Federer, the things that we, you know, have become such a part of American culture have some fascinating roots that go back to Europe, go back to two or three centuries before. So, you know, is this any different?
It isn't. And, I hope that you all are enjoying the fact that we're uncovering some of these traditions. I think it's absolutely fascinating. So we have these really special shows planned for you this week. And today is very special in as much as we will be talking with Sidney Williams. He has written a book. It's called Dear Mary, Letters Home from the 10th Mountain Division. And these are letters that were written from his father and his mother and back and forth, 1944, 1945, when the 10th Mountain Division was in Italy near the end of the war. So it promises to be a really fascinating show. And so thank you for joining us. You, as listeners, you are treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. Strive for excellence and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body every day. And thank you to our great team, to you, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your support, your good work. You are very much appreciated, and so I really just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, you're so generous with your thank yous to all of us, but again, it takes a leader, and I'm not sure that we would be near as effective if we didn't have a good leader.
Well, thank you. Hey, did you get what you wanted for Christmas?
Well, we've kind of turned the corner, and I'm probably giving away my age, but we had a discussion 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it's just, I mean, my wife is hard to buy for because she basically is constantly, you know, buying for herself, and not in a bad way, but she, you know, she knows what her needs are and wants.
She knows what she likes.
Yeah, and You know, I struggled with that for several years. But the point is, we're both getting to the point is in life where we don't really, you know, look for much, don't ask for much. It's more, we even turn the corner with our family. Instead of buying things, we've taken to like taking them out to a surprise dinner that they have. They don't know where we're going. So
fun.
When I say
okay,
surprise, fun. I mean that we get in the car and we go, and then they're surprised when we get here, cool. get there. And so we're making more memories. We've turned the corner to making memories via doing things together versus, you know, anything that might be purchased.
Well, you know, in time together, you know, that is so, it's such a treasure. And I've actually, with many of my gifts, I've gotten to a point where I might give money. And the reason is because it's the right color and it always fits. How's that? Okay.
Okay. Hey, if I could, I read a little bit about what Sydney's book is that you guys will be talking about shortly. And having been in the military, but several decades ago, long before internet, long before cell phones, and I'm sure he's going to touch on this somewhere along the line, the instant communications factor that we take for granted today obviously wasn't present back when this book or the ingredients for this book were coming together. And again, having been in the military, being in another country for a couple of years, thinking about when I want to communicate with somebody, let's say of the opposite persuasion, it was a 10-day event. I would drop that letter in the mail, and just by the fact that I was across the Atlantic, it would guarantee that it would probably take 8 to 10 days to get a response. And I can't wait to see where he goes with this today in talking about what was going on with his parents versus the way we live our lives today in the age of instant communication.
You know, we so take it for granted. We take for granted all of these amazing things that really have come to us because of liberty and free markets, free exchange of goods and services and ideas. It's inherent in the American idea. World War II, these guys were standing against tyranny, both in the Pacific theater and also in the European theater. And Hitler, you know, we talk on this show all the time, Steve, about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And you've got these young people in Hong Kong that are you know, waving American flags. They have a picture of Donald Trump when he indicated that we had support for them. They're singing the Star Spangled Banner. And then you fast forward it over here to America, where we have students that are trashing the American idea and actually having this romance with socialism. And so much blood and treasure was put on the line for World War II. And it wasn't just the soldiers that were fighting, but it was the families back home. And I think that's what's going to be so interesting about Sidney Williams' story is, you know, we don't many times think about what was going on at home. And once these guys got deployed in World War II, they typically didn't come home until the job was done. And so when the war was over, they were trying to get the war over. I mean, it was a really, really big day. And sometimes I think that we take this freedom and all these things that we have for granted. And we just have to remember, a Nazi stands for National Socialist German Workers' Party, Steve.
It does. And, you know, not only did they think that, you know, when this all came about in the late 20s, early 30s, in terms of Hitler's leadership role evolving through, you know, at the time they were thought they were elections, they thought they were really going somewhere that was going to be exciting and great. And then it took on this military tone that not only are we going to do this here, but we're going to start taking it to other countries that
via force
that border via us
via force.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's going to be a great conversation with Sydney. So I chose for our wisdom inspiration the very first paragraph from the book in the dedication page. He says, to politicians and to generals far behind the front lines, the distant actions of war might seem like no more than the movement of pins on a map, necessary but impersonal. The reality for those who fight is much more grim, yet war is sometimes necessary. I believe, especially when freedom is at stake, for there is nothing, not the works of Shakespeare, not the music of Beethoven, not Michelangelo's art, that has been a greater gift from mankind to mankind than liberty. Pretty amazing, Steve.
It is. And, you know, again, the founding fathers, they've been taking a beating. Well, sometimes one day they're taking a beating in Washington, and the next day they're being praised. It depends on, you know,
how the Democrats want to use it. You
yeah.
know? So, hey, with that, I got three jokes for you, though. Are you ready?
Okay. Now, the operative word is joke, but go ahead.
Okay. What do snowmen eat for breakfast? Frosty snowflakes.
Oh, darn.
Okay. What do you call someone who doesn't believe in Father Christmas? A rebel without a clause.
Oh, okay.
And what do you get when you cross a snowman with a vampire? Frostbite. Oh, you should have seen that one coming, Steve. Okay, and before we go to break, and we'll be talking with Sydney Williams, wanted to mention a couple of things that are coming down the pike. Now that Christmas is over, we need to focus on the new year. We're going to have our Stand for Colorado 2020 rally. It's going to be on the first day of the legislative session, 11 o'clock on the west steps of the Capitol. So be there or be square. We need these people to know that we are watching what they are doing. So go to standforcolorado.com. Indicate your interest that you're going to be there. Take the time to show up, because this is going to be one of the most important years in the history of our country and also of our state. And then also on January 13th at Water's Edge Winery, we'll be doing our salon series. It's with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. It'll be from 5 to 8 p.m. And it's the punches to knock down democratic socialism. Apparently, Helen and Paul had done this workshop at the Western Conservative Summit. It was standing room only. So this is our kickoff on our salon series. And so email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And we should have our Eventbrite going here shortly as well. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, thrilled to do this this interview, this conversation with Sydney Williams regarding Dear Mary, Letters Home from the 10th Mountain Division, 1944-1945. You will not want to miss it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
KLZ 560.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are going to have a very interesting conversation with Sydney Williams. He has written a book named Dear Mary, Letters Home from the 10th Mountain Division. It is a beautiful book about letters back and forth from his father, who was serving in Italy, to his mother, who was back in the States. It is a beautiful book. Welcome to the show, Sydney Williams.
Thank you.
So December 26th, did you have a nice Christmas?
We had a beautiful Christmas with our children and 10 grandchildren.
Ah, so the house was very full.
Absolutely.
I love that. But let's jump into this book, because you grew up in a full household as well, didn't you?
I did. I was the second of 9 children.
And you've written this book, Dear Mary, Letters Home from the 10th Mountain Division. Of course, out here in Colorado, the 10th Mountain Division is near and dear to our hearts because of Camp Hale up by Leadville. But your father served there. So You know, tell us, first of all, why you wrote the book, Sidney Williams.
I wrote the book for a few reasons. Number one is I wanted my father died at the age of 58 in 1968, so he never knew his grandchildren, and his youngest child was only 13 years old. And when I found these letters after my mother had died in 1990, it seemed to me sort of an appropriate way of providing a perspective on for my family initially about their parents and grandparents. But then, as I read these letters, it seemed to me that they had a broader purpose, and that is that it told you a different story about the war from the perspective of a soldier who was serving in combat, but was obviously under the censorship, so he couldn't write about certain things about where he was or casualties that he was incurring and that sort of thing. And also from the perspective of the home front, which I don't think has received the full benefit that it should have received. So it seemed to me that there was a broader purpose, a broader scope for this book, in putting it together. And the 10th Mountain Division is sort of a storied outfit, as you mentioned, obviously Colorado being its home base. But and there's an awful lot of information about the book. And so I was able to do a lot of research, and probably the most important thing was the history of the 87th Regiment, which was written by Captain George Earle in the fall of 1945. And that's a day-by-day description of what happened to the 10th when they were in combat in Italy. So I was able to put into perspective these letters, when they were written and what was going on the ground at the time.
Well, I think it's really important that we understand that. I don't think that we really think about just what was going on. Your father was older than many of the young guys that were serving in the war. So tell us a little bit about your dad.
Yeah, he was born in 1910. So he was drafted in the spring of 1944. He was about to turn 34 at the time. He was 33. He had been married in 1938. He had at the time he was drafted, three children with a fourth on the way. He had graduated from Harvard College in 1932, and had started skiing during those years, and so became not a fabulous skier, but he was a very good skier and a dedicated skier. And he had graduated right at the bottom of the Depression, and he became an artist. That was really his first love. He did not want to go into the financial business where his father had been. He was really interested in pursuing art. So he studied sculpture, and that's where he met my mother, actually, in terms of studying sculpture. And they lived in this farmhouse in New Hampshire, which was on property that had been owned by his parents. And that's where we were all raised. During the war, when he was drafted in March of 1943, my mother moved back to her parents' home in Madison, Connecticut, and that's really where she was when she's writing all of the letters that are included in this book.
You know, Sidney, as you're mentioning this now, this is late in the war, and your father,
yes.
Let's see, he was born in 1910. You said he was 33 or 34. Three children at home, one on the way, and he is drafted. And so we have to ask why. And one of the reasons is that there were tremendous losses of American soldiers, young men, as they were fighting in Europe. So late in the war, they were taking family men and men who were older. And I don't think people have really thought about that.
No, I think that's right. They were taking people older. I mean, most of the men in his unit were 18 years old and 19 years old. They were young, right out of high school. He was one of the older ones. There were a few other older ones as well, that had children. But no, it was just, it goes to show you how broad the war was. There were almost 19 million people that I think believe something like 19 to 20 million Americans that served in the war. And at the time, the population of the country was around 140 million. So if you were to put that into perspective today, you'd be talking about something in the area of 50 million people serving in the military. Wow. Something that's incomprehensible, I think, to us today. It was a total war. The other way of looking at it is that virtually everybody was affected. I mean, whether it was an uncle or a father or a brother or a sister or a mother, I mean, virtually everybody had somebody in their family who was in the service.
And Sydney, I cannot imagine what was going through your mother's heart, her mind, when she said goodbye to your father. Your kids weren't that old. So three little ones plus one on the way. What do you think she was thinking?
I think she was probably mostly scared. She was not, when I knew her, a particularly religious person. But one of the things that I found sort of fascinating was her constant references to God. And I think she put a lot of faith in God during that time in her life. But I think as much as anything, she had to be afraid. She had no idea what was going to happen. Mail was slow. It took 7 to 10 days for a letter to get from Italy back to the United States and from the United States back to Italy. So they didn't have the kind of communication. She would be reading the newspapers and listening to the radio, and so she would get the news that way, but she'd hear of a battle on the radio or through the newspapers, and it would be 5 or 6 days before she'd find out whether or not my father had survived it or whether he'd been hurt or what had happened.
You know, and in this day and age where we have instant communication, I don't think we can fathom how they lived. I mean, I can't quite imagine that, Sydney.
No, I think it's very hard. I mean, it's very hard to put yourself back into any sort of historical perspective. It's important to do it to try to understand what was going on at the time, but I think it's very difficult to do it. Letters are a good way of doing it because, unlike histories which are written, with a certain perspective in mind, or letters that are written by famous people who they know those letters are going to be preserved and saved and read by future historians. Personal letters are different because they speak much more from the heart. They're much more open. They are meant to be correspondence that's private. I mentioned at some point, I think, in the book that reading these letters for the first time was like being a fly on the wall of their bedroom. You're hearing things that you're not necessarily supposed to hear, but I think that it's important is to give a better understanding, a better sense as to what was really going through their minds and what was happening to the country at the time.
Well, and these letters, they live and breathe real people, which is, it's just a real gift that you found these down. And you didn't know they existed for quite some time, is that right?
No, I didn't realize they existed until after my mother died in 1990. And then I received my father's letters. My older sister received my mother's letters, and she died. My sister died in 1997, and when she died, a few years later, her daughter gave me these letters, and I said, "This is fascinating. I mean, to get this correspondence between these two people, and the very fact that the letters were saved. I mean, my father's letters were obviously, he would get the letters and write letters when he was sort of away from the front. And so they would be stored in his duffel bag, which would, the duffel bag sort of followed the soldiers forward as they fought over the hills and through the Po Valley. But the very fact that they survived was pretty remarkable, I always thought.
Oh, my gosh, most definitely. So, hey, Sydney Williams, we're talking about your book, Dear Mary, and its letters home from the 10th Mountain Division, 1944-1945. Let's go to break. When we come back, the next thing I'd like to ask you about is the book cover. It is very, very interesting. So this is Kim Munson. This is The Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back. Jason McBride, this story, Sydney Williams, who is our guest, talking about this book that he's written, Dear Mary, and it's the letters between his father and his mother near the end of World War II, 1944-1945. And Jason, I just find it absolutely amazing that here he is, like 33 years old, and he's drafted. He leaves, and he has two little ones and one on the way. I mean, as a father, can you imagine what that would be like?
Oh, I couldn't imagine leaving my kids behind like that. But you have to, give respect and honor because, again, these guys went and did things that most of us would never imagine having to go through to fight for freedom for our country and all kinds of other countries around the world as well. So very selfless act, even though he was drafted. You know, these mm-hmm. guys still get
they
over
did their
there.
Duty.
And they absolutely did their duty. I can't imagine what it would be like to be a wife, at home.
I know.
Waiting for your husband to come home or maybe not to come home and every day wondering if you're going to get that letter or knock at the door and trying to explain to your children where their dad is and how do you handle telling them what might happen or that he might not come home. Very, very difficult, emotional to think about. And again, all these guys that fought in World War II and World War I and Vietnam and
Korea, all the conflicts and wars.
Yeah. What a great country the United States of America is.
It is. And, during this Christmas time, we still live in relative freedom. And it is because of these people that are willing to strap on their boots and pick up their guns and go stand against tyranny. And just a note on that. Nazi stands for National Socialist German Workers' Party. And these guys went and stood against tyranny and stood for freedom. And we are blessed, Jason McBride.
Well, I certainly think we are. And during this Christmas season, that's something to think about, to always be thankful for every year and forevermore. Because, a couple of things could have went just a little bit different, and the whole world could be a whole lot different today. So if you don't think that probably God's hand was there, maybe giving a little nudge this way or that way, it's hard not to imagine that's the case.
Well, yes, divine providence has had his hand on America, and during this Christmas season, celebrating the birth of Christ, it's a really great thing, and so during this time, Merry Christmas and wish you a very prosperous 2020.
All right. Have a fantastic show, Kim.
We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I hope you had a lovely Christmas. Be sure and check out my website. It is Kim Munson, that's spelled MONSON.com. And you can always email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Really honored to have on the line with me Sidney Williams. He's written an amazing book, Dear Mary, it's Letters Home from the 10th Mountain Division. And as many of you know, I had the great honor in 2016 to go to Normandy, France with a group that took four D-Day veterans. And I came back and realized that we need to capture these stories and share these stories. And I've had the great honor of interviewing over 120 World War II veterans. And the story that you are telling about your parents, Sidney Williams, in this book, Dear Mary, is it's really beautiful, and would highly recommend that people get the book. But I before we went to break, I mentioned I would like to hear about the cover. I find the cover absolutely fascinating. So tell me how you chose that and what's going on the cover of the book, Dear Mary.
The cover of the book is two photographs, sort of a composite of one imposed upon the other. Both photographs were taken by a man named Lieutenant David Walker, who was in the 87th Regiment of the 10th Mountain Division, in which my father served. The book was published, 1,000 copies of it were published in April of 1946. And what I did was to give to the publisher, Bound Publishing, the book to go through and pick out certain photographs. And they took two different photographs from that book. So both these photographs were taken during the war and in that spring of 1945 when they were fighting in Italy. The writer is not my father, but it's obviously a soldier writing a letter of some sort. The reason I know it's not my father is because he's too neatly dressed, so it's probably an officer.
Okay.
My father would have been more similar to one of the three men.
Got it.
On the cover, who are facing that house in which a German machine gun is set up and which they are attacking.
Now, in my mind, you know, I've done a lot of research on D-Day. I've talked to a lot of D-Day vets, a lot of Battle of the Bulge vets. And so in my mind, until I started to read your book, I hadn't really thought about what was going on over in Italy. And in fact, the 87th Regiment, the 10th Mountain Division, there was a lot of combat. They lost a lot of men, and this was very late in the war. So talk to us about that, Sidney.
Yeah, it was late in the war, and they all knew that the war was coming to an end. You know, I mean, 9 months earlier or 8 months earlier on D-Day, the invasion force, you know, went into mainland Europe, into France. So by the spring of 1945, I think everybody knew that the Germans would lose the war. The question was when. And the Battle of the Bulge had taken place in December, January of 1944-45. And that sort of, I think, frightened the people to a certain extent. But the Germans just wouldn't surrender. One sort of wonders, I mean, how long would it have to go on? And The 10th Mountain Division was assigned. What had happened in Italy, just backing up a little bit, but what happened in Italy was that Rome fell in June of 1944, the day before D-Day. The Germans decided just to move north, and they established what they called the Gothic Line, which went between the Tyrrhenian Sea on the west to the Adriatic on the east, and across the northern Apennines, with Mount Belvedere being the highest point. That's where they established the defense line. In the fall of 1944, the British 8th Army and the American 5th Army had both made attempts to take Belvedere, and in both cases they had failed. So it fell to the 10th Mountain Division to try to take it. And Belvedere was the linchpin, and what the 10th Mountain Division did this was not my father's regiment, but this was the 85th or the 86th. And now I think it was the 86th, was sent up River Ridge. And River Ridge was about a 2,000-foot cliff, and the top of it overlooked the slopes of Belvedere. And the Germans had guns on the top of Belvedere aimed at the slopes on Belvedere, which had prevented earlier attempts to take Belvedere. On the night of February 18th, 1945, about 700 men from the 86th scaled up River Ridge, and they did it without losing anybody, and they took out the German guns. And then the next night, Belvedere was the attack on Belvedere began, and that lasted about 5 or 6 days.
You know, Eiske Vale, I never realized that River Ridge was named after this.
Yes, yeah, the River Ridge was named after. Yeah, there were a lot of people from Vale that came out of the 10th Mountain Division, Pete Seibert probably being the most famous.
Okay, so what's your father doing during all of this then, Sidney Williams?
Well, my father was in the attack on Belvedere, and he writes a letter to my mother that's in this book a few days later, in which he talks about the shelling being and the fighting being somewhat worse than the previous time that he'd been on the front, which this was really their first battle. There had been some skirmishes before this, but this was really their first battle. But he doesn't want to upset my mother. So he basically talks about the fact that the view was beautiful, the weather was nice, and he mentions that it's an odd place to have a battle. So if you read that letter, you would think not much of anything. But the fact of the matter is over 200 men were killed on that going up Belvedere, and over 700 were wounded. So it was obviously very bloody and a very bloody night and few days that followed. In terms of total casualties, the 10th Mountain Division was in combat for about 2.5 months. I mean, if you take the middle of February to the end of April, when the war in Italy was over on May 2nd. So if you take that 2.5 months, they lost over 1,000 men dead, and perhaps twice that, three times that in terms of wounded. So on a time in battle, based on just time in battle, they had some of the biggest losses of any unit in World War II.
Did your father ever talk much about it, Sidney?
He did talk about some of it, and I think part of the reason he was able to do that was he was older, and so I think, was able to sort of adapt to it a little bit better. He didn't talk about the horrible things that happened, but there is a letter, for example, where he writes to my mother about a man named Sergeant Lester Erzwind, who came from Ames, Iowa, and this was in the what they called the second offensive, and it was near the Castle D'Anno, which is where Senator Bob Dole was badly wounded. And there was a lot of shelling going on, and my father writes to my mother about, how bad the shelling was, but he felt better because of this Sergeant Erzwind, who had talked to him about it and mentioned as they were crouching, trying to avoid the shells, that if he survived it, he would write a book about the futility of war, and my father enjoyed it, and he said he felt much better about it. And then he, about 2 weeks later, as the spring offensive began on the 14th of April, on the second day of that spring offensive, Sergeant Erzwind was leading a group of soldiers through a field that had obviously been mined, with German snipers on a ridge ahead of them, and the dirt from a bullet that had hit the ground flew up and hit Sergeant Erzlin in the eye. He stumbled, fell, and fell on four Schumanns and was killed instantly. My father used to talk to me about that particular incident, you know, about how they had been going across this field, and they were, you know, the man leading them had been killed. And my father used to tell me that he said that they were out there, what did they do? And he said that he ended up leading them back. But he never had told me that, you know, who the man killed was. And he never told me that, you know, how much he liked this person. But because through the research that I had done, and particularly through this book by Captain George Earle, I was able to determine who the man was. He had described him as being Scandinavian and a first sergeant. But through those two clues, I was able to determine exactly who it was and what happened to him.
And as a child,
so he did talk about some of these things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think you've noted some of that in the book as well, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
No, I make. Yeah.
Okay. Great. You know what? Let's go to break. This is going by very quickly, Sydney Williams. This is Kim Munson, and we are talking about this book, Dear Mary. It's letters that were written from his father and his mother when his father was serving with the 10th Mountain Division at the end of World War II. In Italy. Fascinating book. Let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show, and happy day after Christmas. This is a very special show that we have for you. I have on the line with me Sydney Williams. He's written this book, Dear Mary. It's letters home from the 10th Mountain Division. It's letters from his mother to his father and his father back to his mother. When his father left to go serve with the 10th Mountain Division, they had three little ones and one on the way. And, you know, we don't really talk about the home front that much, Sydney. So let's do that, because you really, with these letters, have an understanding of what was going on back at home. So what would your comment be on that?
Well, I think that, I mean, I have some memories of that period of time. I remember when my father came home for leave in August of 1944. Right after my sister Betsy had been born on August 4th of 1944, and he was home for 3 weeks. And then when he left home at the end of August, he went to Camp Swift in Texas, and where he joined the 10th Mountain Division. And that was the last time my mother saw him before he went overseas. The next time she would see him would be on VJ Day when he returned. But I remember that incident in the New Haven Railroad Station, and sort of walking around like among this forest of khaki trees, which were, because I was three and a half or almost 4 years old, and my mother had gone back to her parents' house, and her parents lived in Madison, Connecticut. They had a pretty big house. Compared to the way a lot of people lived in that period of time, we were very fortunate and we were very comfortable. They lived on the Long Island Sound. They had a fair amount of land. There was a barn. My mother bought a Shetland pony when we were there, and she bought a horse. We had brought goats with us and chickens and that sort of thing. So we had the animals. And so a lot of our time was spent with the animals. But the there is obviously there are shortages. I mean, gasoline was one. Food was another. So my mother had a garden and where she grew vegetables, and I never had realized, for example, before that kale was so popular. But kale was an easy vegetable to grow, and my mother makes several references to it. The gasoline was obviously short, and she wanted to save the gasoline for her periodic trips up to New Hampshire, which there might have been three of them in the course of the year that we were there. So what we would do is, if she wanted to go into town or she wanted to see some friends of hers from in town in Madison itself, she would hitch up the pony cart. Mitzi was the Shetland pony we had, and we'd all get in the cart, and off we would go down the driveway and down the roads. And there were still dirt roads at that point in time in Madison. You had to go across the post road, which was paved, but there was a road on the other side of it. And she could get into town on dirt roads fairly well, which seems odd today.
So there's four little kids. She puts four little kids in the way. How long of a ride was it?
It was probably about 2 miles. Okay. I mean, it wasn't that far, and but she loved horses. My mother loved horses and always was a horsewoman the rest of her life, so this was no problem for her, but it was. I think the what you notice as much as anything else, I mean, I didn't notice any of it because to me at that age, I mean, this was the way life is. I mean, you know, you don't know any different. But I think for my mother, as I mentioned before, it was the fear and it was the loneliness. And even though she had her mother with her, it was the loneliness of not having her husband with her. You couldn't buy the kinds of food that you can buy you could have bought before the war or after the war. So there were shortages of that.
So I'm just thinking of the amount of work. I mean, having animals probably was a good thing because you have to focus on taking care of them and feeding them. And you know, staying busy during times like that, I think, is probably pretty healthy, and it probably helps the days go by. And you know, taking care of four little kids then. I mean, she had a lot on her plate at that time.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. I think that was critical. She would basically go to bed every night exhausted,
mm-hmm.
And that's when she usually wrote my father. She was tired, so she had to keep up this sort of appearance of a positive thing for her children, and sort of keep those emotions pent up. And as you say, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, she, you know, working, having a lot to do, made a big difference. It helped get through that period of time.
Did she get much help with the children? Oh, go ahead, Sydney. Go ahead.
No, I was going to. You were starting to say, did she have much help? My grandmother had. I think there was a cook there, and there might have been one or two other people in help. She had a gardener. Who helped as well, sort of a handyman, not so much a gardener, but more of a handyman, and that helped with certain things. But the taking care of the children was something that she did herself.
Four little ones.
She cut my hair. I remember when she cut off a piece of my ear one time.
Oops, she must have had a lot on her mind. So we've got just about probably 5 minutes left here. What are the things that you want people to know about this book, and where can people get this book, Dear Mary?
Well, the book can be bought at any bookstore or through Amazon. I think the most important thing about the book is it's a personal story, and it's a true story, and it. I think, at least what I hope it does, is it provides a flavor of that period of time. And not only the war, but also the fact of what was going on 75 years ago. and the way that the country was and the world was and how we communicated. And as much as anything, it's also, it's a love story, you know, between my parents. And you can see that the devotion to one another. And my father's, for example, desire to find out what's happening at home. How are the children doing? How is Frank doing? How is Sydney doing? How is Mary doing? How is Betsy doing? And wanting to know about the goats and how much milk are they giving, and this desire to have the war behind you, and to go back to a regular life, a normal life. I mean, my father, I think, he never wanted to travel again. He never wanted to go anywhere to be apart from my mother, and other than going skiing or that sort of thing. I mean, he never did. I mean, he never traveled again. They never went back to Italy. My mother had studied in Italy. My father had been there during the 1920s and the early 1930s. But they never went back again. They never, they basically wanted to be at home. That was the, that's what the war, I think, did to them as much as anything else. It turned them into real homebodies.
Well, after you've seen, you know, what can happen at home, I mean, there's something great about home and family. What was it like when your father came home? And on that note, I was talking to a young guy who is probably about the age of what your father was when he went to serve. And he said, you know, I hadn't really thought about this, but in World War II, you didn't have a deployment. You were there until the job was done. And so they never knew for sure when they were going to come home. They had to make sure that they took care that the war was over, and that's when they came home. And I hadn't even really thought about that either, Sydney. I find that pretty remarkable.
No, that's right. There was a point system. But the point system, there was a point system that was based upon on the number of children you had, the number of months that you'd served in overseas, that you'd served in combat, for any awards won. You know, my father got 4 or 5 points for each child, and he got 5 points for the Bronze Star that he won, and he got double the points for each month he was overseas. But at the end of the war, he was still shy. He needed I forget the numbers exactly, but you needed something like 85 points to be sent back to the United States. And he had something like 65 or 66 points. So he was way shy of what he needed. And so I think one of the things that people sometimes forget is that when the war in Europe was over, which was on May 8th, the war in the Pacific was continuing to go on, and nobody, of course, knew about the atomic bomb. The decision was made sometime around that time by Truman that they would invade Japan, not blockade it and bomb it into submission, but they would actually invade it. And the invasion was scheduled for October of that year, and so that after the war was over, and the 10th Mountain Division was up in northeastern Italy, sort of on the Yugoslav border. The intent was that they would be sent back to the United States for 3 weeks or a month's leave, and then they would be sent to the Pacific. That hung over them. I've included all the letters from the period of time after the war was over, as long as they were in Italy, because underlying it all, and you can see it in my mother's letters as well. I mean, there's a belief that the war in Europe is over, but there's that fear that there's more combat to come, and it would have been in Italy, in Japan, in the invasion of Japan. I've always been a big fan of the fact that they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki because I really believe that the number of people that would have been killed and wounded in an invasion would have been enormous on both sides.
It would be.
Both,
Yeah. I've talked to guys
catastrophic.
That have said that served in the Pacific. They said that actually dropping the atomic bombs saved their lives. And they said they thought, like you say, enormous losses on both the Japanese and with the Americans also. So, hey, Sydney Williams, we are out of time. It's just been such an honor to get to interview you regarding this book. It's Dear Mary, Letters Home from the 10th Mountain Division. You can get it at bookstores. You can get it at Amazon. Sydney, what's your final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think my final thought is that we should always do everything we possibly can to avoid a war.
And yes, most definitely. War changes people. War is really tough. But this great generation that, you know, they went out and they stood against evil and tyranny. We do have to stand against evil and tyranny. Ideally, I'd like to stand it in the battle of ideas. but thank you. Thank you to your father. Thank you to your mother. And thank you, Sydney Williams, for writing this amazing book. Wish you a very, very prosperous 2020.
Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you. And our quote for today is from Sydney Williams. He says, "We in the world are freer, richer, and safer because of the sacrifice such men made. They deserve our remembrance and our prayers. And that is why this book is dedicated to those who served in the 10th Mountain Division during the Second World War." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.